Aloha. I can guarantee you, I was on to speak last Sunday, and we made sudden arrangements to go out of town, and I told Lowell the week before I didn't know if I could get things arranged in time to switch with him 2 weeks ago, and it didn't work out, and I can guarantee you, you would have had a totally different lesson than what you're going to hear today after what has happened in the last 2 weeks. I'd like to apologize for my wife's behavior on Facebook. I don't get on the computer, so nobody can hold me responsible for whatever she put on there. And I know that there would not be one drop of sympathy without a bucket full of sarcasm to go along with it if I told you about some of the things that caused a problem. After Joyce posting that our temperatures every day was between 81 and 85 degrees the past 10 days, and then she told me Randy posted, it's 3 degrees outside and I can't find any of them. So we decided we were in the right place the last 10 days. So Joyce posted Hawaii sunrises and sunsets. And so if I was to talk now about the four-hour time difference and the jet lag we experienced, I'm sure I would hear a lot of, oh, poor babies, I feel so bad towards you, or I feel so bad for you. And I know there's no sympathy to be had there. But I had to bring up the jet lag for some of the storyline I'm about to tell you. Rodney picked us up at 4:30 Friday at the airport, and we were excited to give them and their kids some gifts that we had gotten in Hawaii for everybody. And he said after we got done eating, we could come over. So Joyce and I went out to eat. We ordered our meal, and we were eating our appetizer, and Joyce looked up at me and says, I don't feel so good. And I said, I don't either. And so the jet lag had gotten hold of us, and so she went home, and I boxed the food up, and we both went home and went to bed. So we were paying the price for what our trip was. But so I got up yesterday morning, and I decided that I was going to go and work out yesterday morning to try and get a heads up on whatever my vacation had done to me. And so I decided to see how bad my bad food choices had affected me, and I went into the locker room and weighed in and discovered the scale told me that I'd lost 12 pounds while I was in Hawaii. And I said to myself, I've got to go back soon. So I go to the workout room to go use the elliptical machine, thinking about my amazing weight loss. And I hate the elliptical, but I'm ready for it. I can do this. I've already lost 12 pounds. So I go in there and do the elliptical, and there's a weight, there's a scale in that room as well. So I went over and weighed myself again, and it turns out that my 12 pounds just had jet lag. It didn't show up on the first scale. It showed up when I got on the second scale. So I hadn't really lost 12 pounds at all. My belt buckle was telling me after the first weigh-in, you didn't lose no 12 pounds. And so the jet lag even affected my body to where my 12 pounds didn't show up till later. The title of my lesson this morning is The Best Gifts in Life. For the first 52 years of my life, I could only dream of what Hawaii might look like. 11 years ago, we were able to go see it, and I was blown away by what I experienced. We were able to go on four islands, and I could not believe that every island could be so different and so warm in January and so beautiful. And as wonderful as our vacation to Hawaii was, I can't say it was the best gift, one of the best gifts I've had in life. And I hope to explain that as we go on. When I was in high school, I loved science and math. I loved vocational agriculture. And I even did well in regular English. I loved reading books about World War II, especially those that talked about the air and navy battles in the Pacific, because they were real things that happened. But my sophomore year, one semester, I was required to take English literature. I hated it. And I remember the first book that we were supposed to read was called A Tale of Two Cities. How many people have read that? Remember having that in school? Well, you may not be able to relate to well. I'm going to tell you what I remember about the book. It was the first line. Julene probably knows what it is. You want to tell us what it is? Yeah, that's right. The book started out, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And so was my vacation. And I hope to point out why. We're going to do the best of times first. In the book of Psalms, chapter 8, David has this to say. O Lord, O Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou hast made him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet. When we get an opportunity to be exposed to the Lord's handiwork, to the Lord's creation, we can be in awe of what he has created. And while we were on our trip, every day we sang, "This is the day the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." And I feel no different being back in Iowa of leaving that song out, because I still want to celebrate that this is the day that the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I see Steve and Pat sitting back there, and it made me think while I was out there. Steve and Pat went with us on vacation to Colorado back in the 90s, and we were able to get on top of one of the mountains, and we sang How Great Thou Art. I hope you remember that. But it's the Lord's handiwork bears witness to him every day that there is a God, there is a creator. And so we would rotate between songs, This Is the Day, How Great Thou Art, and number 667 in the red, When I Behold the Wonders of Creation, and how all these things testify there is a God. You have to be blind to go to Hawaii and not believe there is a God. A couple of things that the Lord used to make it impressive is that most people do not realize that when you measure from the base, the tallest mountain in the world is in Hawaii. It's just that it's like an iceberg. The bottom 20,000 feet of it is underwater. But on the Big Island, that volcano that's dormant is 13,780 feet tall. And it has snow on top of it while we were there. We went up to the 9,200 foot level of it. It was blacktopped up to that, and if you didn't have a four-wheel drive, they wouldn't let you go any further than that. And so we climbed another 200 feet up, although it was bit by bit because the air was thin enough that this old man and his wife were panting, trying to make it up another 200 feet higher. But the view that we had, I told Joyce when we was up there, I said, this makes me think of Moses when he was taken up on the mount and shown what he was going to be missing. And the view that you get to see shows you the handiwork of God. So when you go to Denver and you see the Rocky Mountains, you're already at 5,000 feet. So if you're looking at a mountain that's 13, 14,000 feet tall, the bottom 5,000 of it is already buried by the plain. So when you go out to Hawaii and you see a mountain that comes right up out of the ocean, almost 14,000 feet tall, it makes you believe there is a creator. But of all the islands, Big Island is most ecologically diverse. There are said to be 13 climate regions on Earth, but the Big Island has all but two of those on one island. The Arctic and the Sahara are the only ones missing. I want to point out some of these things so it can compare to what I'm going to bring up later. We walked by sea turtles and nearly extinct monk seals that were sunning themselves on the beach. Joyce snorkeled with all kinds of tropical fish, including a barracuda. None of these things left the biggest impression, though, of being in Hawaii. That came from something that wasn't even in my travel itinerary package. The day I was reminded that you are not in control of your own life. 1 week ago on Saturday morning at 8:05, I called Mark Herman and left a message to ask him to teach my class. And at 8:07, we were at the airport getting ready to fly from the Big Island to the next island. We were within 30 minutes of getting on our plane. And if you'd like to see it later, I will show you what a ballistic missile warning looks like. And when your phone goes off, you think it's an Amber Alert. And everybody in the airport got the same buzz. And then somebody from security runs out in the middle of all of us and said, there is a missile in the air headed to Hawaii. You got to get inside now. And Joyce had gone off to one of the shops. I didn't even know where she was at. And so in capital letters, here's what I read. Extreme alert. Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. So the security officer ran out in the middle of the crowd and yelled out that this missile was headed for us. And we were all directed into a restaurant. And from launch, I was told it would take only 13 to 15 minutes for the missile to reach us. And 5 to 7 minutes had already gone by. Joyce showed up from the store, and the phone system was overloaded. You couldn't call out. Everybody was trying to call out. So Joyce sent a text to our boys saying goodbye. What do you do when you think you have 5 minutes to live? We prayed. and we watched the sky to see how much longer it would be. And I thought about this scripture warning us, he will return as a thief in the night. You won't know when he's coming. We got 5 minutes warning. We can make ourselves right with God. How many people get to do that? We can be sure that we are right with God. So when we prayed, I naturally prayed that the Lord, if it was thy will, this wouldn't happen. And then, if it does, that we might be forgiven and have a home with him. What else can you do? I never saw a mass group of people getting on their knees when they got that word. It was a situation that no one could do anything to stop it. We had all turned in our rental cars. We couldn't run. We had to stay. And there was such a panic by security that they forced everybody inside, whether they'd been through security or not. And so when the warning passed, about 2,000 people were all forced out of the airport to go through security again. Everybody was stunned in disbelief. I seen one man panicked, trying to find his family and yelling at him, "Didn't you look at your phone?" Nobody expects. I didn't even know such a warning was possible to get on your phone. I thought about it before I left home, that as crazy as our world is, wouldn't it be something if we go to Hawaii and the Koreans decide they're going to see if they can hit it. But it was a passing thought. And as everybody knows, it didn't come true. But how many of us go through life without warnings in time to make a change in our life? So we were reminded, every day is a gift. What are we doing with that gift? Do we receive it as a gift, whether you are in Iowa, or whether you're enjoying yourself on vacation in Hawaii? I thank God regularly that I was raised on an Iowa farm. I love Iowa. My biggest regret is that all kids were not able to be raised on a farm. So can this experience be considered a gift? That I was momentarily told I had 5 minutes to live. Because a nuclear blast is not survivable. The Kona Airport, it never gets below 65 degrees there. They have a wooden wall around with umbrellas and tables to sit at inside because it only rains 10 inches a year on that side of the island, and they don't even have structural buildings there. It's just a partition to divide those that have been through security and those that haven't. So there was really no security in sending me into the restaurant. This experience should be a reminder to self-examine myself. To be reminded that the next car you meet on the road may be the one that has a heart attack and comes across the center line at you. You don't have control as much as we would like to think. It made me think about the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where George Bailey wanted to end his life to get rid of his problems. And the guardian angel showed him what the world would have been like had he not been born as he requested. And how many people would have suffered because George not being there. And it restored within him the will to live again. Ask King David what the biggest gift he ever got in his life was. And it wouldn't have been physical items. You would turn to 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter, and verse 1 and 7 describes one of the most unpleasant things that David endured in his life. It was when Nathan came in and told him the story about the poor man and the rich man, and the rich man taking the poor man's only sheep and slaughtering it to feed his guests. And David was so angry he wanted the man to die. And Nathan told him, "You are the man." And if you would ask David now what the most valuable gift was that he had in his life, it would have been that moment where somebody loved him enough to show him what his sin was, that he would not be condemned to hell forever. Sometimes the unpleasant experiences of life are the ones that actually make us better people. So when you experience something as such as we did, nobody would have wanted to voluntarily done that. But can I take something that was a bad part of my vacation, a lemon, and make it into lemonade and grow from the experience, grow from the warning that I will be better prepared the rest of my life? The unpleasant events in life help us be prepared to meet our Maker. Who do you know who needs to know, be told the truth, such as David needed to hear it from Nathan? So what qualifies as a gift? All have given a gift to a child and had them look at it, unwrap it, and it's not really what they wanted, and they set it down, they go on to something else. Ever experienced that? You put all your time and then you put money into picking something out, and the gift is not well received. How do you suppose God feels when he says, "I'm going to give them another day"? I hope they don't waste it. Every day is a gift. And how frustrated the Lord must get with us when we set it down and just expect it to be there in the morning. The best gifts in life are not toys, they are not cars, they are not homes, and they are not vacations. The best gifts in life are not things at all. The best gifts in life are moments of revelation. Things hidden being revealed to someone you care about that saves their soul, such as King David and Nathan saving David from his sin. The best gifts in life are handwritten notes and cards from your children and your grandchildren without any store-bought poems and pictures in them, but they're the words that your son or your daughter expresses to you from their heart. The best gifts in life are moments of teaching, successfully passing on the things you were taught that allow all of us to live life to the fullest. Lessons that are often resented when they're received, but appreciated when they get older. The best gifts in life include always telling the truth, even when we would prefer to hear something smoother. The most rewarding gift in life, though, is sharing with others. I have here a letter from, how many of you have heard of Pinky Swear? I had not heard of it till I was listening to WHO radio when I was in the excavator one day. And what it is, the story behind it, it's a foundation that helps families that have children with cancer. And this Pinky Swear got started about 15 years ago, approximately, when a boy that was about 9 years old had cancer that they'd given him about 6 months to live. And this boy was in the cancer ward. And he's seen this other family crying. So he went over to talk to him to find out why. And he found out that the experience had financially ruined that family. They didn't know how to pay their bills. This boy had $8,000 in his bank. And he told his father, he says, I want to get my savings out. And so he went and got all of his money out. And he broke it out into, I don't know how many envelopes he put it in, but he took all $8,000 out. And he went around his ward and handed that money out. And when he seen the expressions on everybody's face, he told his dad that was the best day of his life. I want to do it again next year. And his dad said, son, you're not going to be here next year. So the boy said, dad, give me your pinky. He says, I want you to pinky swear with me that you'll do it again next year. The boy was unfazed with the fact that he was going to die. He just knew the adrenaline feeling that he felt when he made somebody else feel good. And he wanted his dad to continue that. And so this story is told every year in December, and they have this drive. And they told that story, and they had a boy on WHO that 3 years earlier was going through the treatments. And he told Van Harden, he says, I want your job. And they didn't know whether he was going to live to the next year. Well, he's 3 years later, he did get cured of his cancer. And so this year he told Van again, he says, I still want your job. And so this is an example of what you need to listen to when you feel unfulfilled and unhappy in life. If you want the best gift in life, find a way to share with others. And you will find great satisfaction in your life. Instead of trying to see how many things you can get out of life, see how many people you can help through life. It doesn't have to be with money. You give someone some of your time. It's the most valuable thing you have. And it was first given to you by God anyway. So it's time. Learn to share it. That's one of my New Year's resolutions. The last 8 years since the economy collapsed around 2008-09, being self-employed has totally consumed me trying to survive, losing all of my builders in 1 year's time and rebuilding my business to go a different direction to where I don't want to work for any home builders anymore. I spent the last 4 months of 2017 working 6.5 days a week to meet the deadlines that I had before me. And I ended the year in the worst physical shape, the worst spiritual shape of my life. I have to make 2018 the year I make changes in my life, or I may not see the next one. What about you? Why not now? Why not commit to reading the entire Bible as Mark and Ginger have laid out in this outline to start your year? It will change your life. My 91-year-old mother is busy. Can you hear me? She shares her time with others. She still makes meals for people. She sends out bulletins and cards to others, and she calls other people. And she doesn't have time to act her age. So don't even try to make her. But she's been thinking about going to a nursing home. No, she don't want to live there. She wants to go there and talk with those people that do live there. She wants to encourage them and tell them stories and to share memories with them and to see if anybody has more grandchildren and great-grandchildren than she does. One woman in a nursing home in Topeka, Kansas, had been corresponding with my mother, and Mom got Steve Wright to go see her, and Steve had been having Bible studies at that nursing home ever since with a group of the people that lived there. And last year, Joyce took her to meet this woman for the very first time. They didn't even know each other face to face. Mom always said, if you want to have friends, you have to show yourself to be friendly. People don't need your money as much as they need your time. Yesterday on the news, they said that Great Britain was going to make a new minister position for loneliness. Can you imagine? The family is not getting it done, which leads to depression and people not wanting to live. And Steve, if you can help me with this, when Inez was in the nursing home, didn't you tell me that when she died, they told you that 90% of the people there never had anybody come see him again? And they were going to really mess Steve because Steve went all the time. And when Inez died, the nursing home staff was distraught because they knew they couldn't have Steve there to be with them. So start your year off giving of your time. The Lord gave it to you in the first place. He just wanted to see what you would do with it. You know, if Mom was British, she could probably have a chance at that new job, Minister for Loneliness, but her maiden name is Sherwood. Isn't that British? There is something you can do. You don't have to give money to something to be happy. Give of yourself. There'll be great satisfaction in what you accomplish. I hope you do not have to have a ballistic missile warning come over your phone to make you realize you need to make a change in your life. We're going to bring this meeting to a close and give you a chance. We have this moment now. We don't know whether we have it tomorrow. You have a moment to make a change. Give some time to the Lord as we stand and sing.